from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 19, The Killing of a Demon Hiranyaksha, Text 27. Shito Sainam Tamakunta Vajasam.
Shito Sainam Tamakunta Vajasam.
Kara Damstram Paridasta Dachadam.
Kara Damstram Paridasta Dachadam.
Translation of Prabhupada by Srila Prabhupada. Aja, Brahma, and others arrived on the spot to see the fiery tusk demon lying on the ground, biting his lip. The glow of his face was yet unfaded, and Brahma admiringly said, "Oh, who could meet such blessed death?" Purport. Although the demon was dead, his body luster was unfaded. This is very peculiar because when a man or animal is dead, the body immediately becomes pale. The luster gradually fades, and decomposition takes place. But here, although Hiranyaksha lay dead, his body luster was unfaded because the Lord, the Supreme Spirit, was touching his body. One's bodily luster remains fresh only as long as the spirit's soul is present. Although the demon's soul had departed his body, the Supreme Spirit touched the body, and therefore his bodily luster did not fade. The individual soul is different from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One who sees the Supreme Personality of God and when he quits his body is certainly very fortunate. And therefore, personalities like Brahma and the other demigods eulogize the death of the demon. Om Agyana Timilandasya Kinantana Shalakaya Shakshum Nitanina Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Muni Sam Stapitamira Mutare Swami Vaparamaya Tatsa Parantikam Mukham Karoti Vachalam Pangam Nangayati Girim Yakipata Maham Vandeshu Gurim Gimitarinam Vancha kalpa trivishcha kripa sindhivya eva cha patita nam pavnevyo vaishnavevyo namo namaha jai shri krishna devatanya prabhu nityananda gradhar shiva sari gaur bhakta vinda hare krishna hare krishna 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 hare 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 rama hare rama 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 hare hare. So, Hare Krishna, we are discussing the killing of the demon Hiranyaksha. Just so that we all remember which wonderful incarnation of the Lord killed this demon, pop quiz.
Which incarnation?
Oh, Sanghavara, Lord Boar, Lord Varaha. So this is Lord Varahadev's transcendental pastime. And prior to this text, we were hearing the vivid description of what was happening, not only whilst they were fighting, but the different changes that were happening around them in terms of the universal citizens. What was happening to the weather, the transformation. There were different types of things falling from the sky. Deity, upon remembering what her husband had told her, that yes, you will bear sons, but they will be killed by the Supreme Personality of God himself. And as she remembered that fact, blood started flowing from her breasts. Now we know that naturally, when mothers are afflicted with affection, as we also read in Krishna book, milk naturally starts flowing, even for mother cow. That's happening. But in this scenario, blood started flowing from her breast, which was of course inauspicious and inauspicious at the same time, because her sons were being killed, touched personally by the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. So apart from that, there were different inauspicious omens that were seen around different types of personalities, women armed with tridents and their hair hanging loose. The weather was overcast. It was raining, hair, blood, stool, and pus. Now, of course, nowadays there are so many persons with demonic tendencies, and they perform very heinous acts, but of course we do not see or we do not experience this type of rainfall. But in this past time, of course, the Supreme Lord, these are specific activities that the Lord is performing, and specific pastimes have been put in the Bhagavatam just to show the various attributes and qualities of the Supreme Lord. So in this text 27, we are hearing, of course, about death, because the demon had been slain by the Lord. And Lord Brahma himself, Ajat, meaning the unborn one who appeared from the navel of Mahavishnu, was really admiring the situation as to how this demon Hiranyaksha had departed from his very sinful body. So he was struck with awe and veneration, because as we read in the purport, when the soul leaves the body, naturally or normally the body loses any type of color or any type of beauty or opulence. But in this situation, it is explained how, because the Supreme Spirit had touched the body after the soul, the minute soul, had left, this body had maintained some type of luster, although the soul had already departed. So one's bodily luster generally only survives so long as the spirit soul is within the body. But by the presence or by the touch of the Supreme Lord on the body of Hiranyaksha, there was some type of bodily luster. And this shows just the fortunate situation of this demon who had just been killed. If we look in terms of the rasa being exchanged here, we know that this so-called demon had been one of the gatekeepers in Vaikuntha, and had descended to enact this pastime for the pleasure of the Lord. Now, as it has been mentioned, the Supreme Lord can very easily discard of demons. And sometimes he doesn't even have to descend himself. He can just withdraw one of his weapons who will manifest and kill such demons, whether it's the Sudarshan Chakra, the club, or different devotees sent to perform such activities on his behalf. But here we see how the Lord himself comes in a chivalrous spirit to come and engage in this pastime with his devotee. So in that way, the Lord, Lord Bhor, Varaha, he appeared, of course, with his beautiful tusks, with wonderful reddish golden luster, and bedecked with jewels. Now, there are not so many hawks that just appear with jewels. When we read the description of Varahadev, it's a beautiful boar. But if we go to India and we check out the boars, or if we go to the farmer's market or the zoo, they don't necessarily look magnanimous. But the Lord has the potency to make everything sweet and attractive in whatever form he chooses to take. So just by appearing in this way, the Lord is bewildering so many atheists or those who do not accept him. Just by appearing as a boar and fighting with Hiranyaksha and being successful and playing with him in between this fight, same thing was happening in so many pastimes of the Lord. The Lord can easily discard of an insignificant demon, but the Lord himself preaches by example, right? The Lord tolerates, okay, give it all you've got, give me your best shot. And we see here with Hiranyaksha. Hiranyaksha was trying to will, he was performing so many magical feats, trying to squash the Lord, trying to dispel this weapon or that weapon. And for the Supreme Lord, that was so insignificant. But he tolerated the attempts of Hiranyaksha to try to be successful. And when the time was right, of course, giving pleasure to the devotees in the universe who are watching this pastime. That's the other point, that the Lord performs these pastimes also for the pleasure of the devotees, so that they get the satisfaction that, look at our Lord and how powerful and how merciful He is to engage in this pastime and show by example how He treats different types of personalities. So in this day and age, when people die, or if there's a huge or unthinkable death of a great person, mind you, this type of demon, Hiranyaksha or Hiranyakashipu, they were very, very expert in sense gratification, whether it was woman, gold, any type of enjoyment. And that's the type of mood we have in Kali Yuga at the moment. Being happy means illicit activities. It means by any means necessary, we try to satisfy the fleeting senses. So demons are very, very expert at doing that. So when the Lord comes to curb such activities, the devatas, those who are saintly by nature, they are looking on these pastimes, and when the Lord slays such demons, there will be some kettle drums beating, petals will be falling from the skies, everyone will be rejoicing. Now if we go outside there and who is the most famous person at the moment in the world? Apart from Donald Trump. Who's, let's say, Beyonce. Right? Very great at sense gratification, you know, using the illusory energy to bewilder others, etc., etc. I won't go into detail, we know all about that. So let's say she gets slayed and she dies. And then there are the demigod-like devotees rejoicing. Well, we're beating the mridanga, we're playing the cartels, we're throwing flower petals. Persons might think we've lost the plot. Because death from a spiritual vision is something that is very, very temporary. And this is how, when Arjuna is posing his five arguments in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna slays these different arguments and says, why are you lamenting for something that is so insignificant? The body is temporary, and whether you choose to fight or not, this war will remain successful and these persons will be liberated. So with the body's death comes another body. Just as a person takes off old garments and put on new ones, the soul similarly takes on one body, rejecting another body. So Arjuna was also posing this question and lamenting for the death of a material body, not understanding, of course, that that material body is very much temporary. Of course, Arjuna is speaking on our behalf, because Arjuna is one of the twice when he's very intelligent, self-realized. But on our behalf, these questions, this dialogue has been posed in the Bhagavad Gita. So when we hear of such descriptions, it is not that we think that the Lord is so cruel. He kills people with his tusks. There's rivers of blood, limbs flying. How inauspicious, how do you worship such a Lord? But no, we understand that the Lord is just making another opportunity for the living entity to continue in their devotional service. This demon Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu had descended particularly to engage in a pastime with the Lord. So with the exoneration or with the expulsion of this body, it does not mean the end of the soul. The soul is eternal by nature. There is neither birth nor death. Now the soul is always existing. So hence, when the devatas hear of a personality being personally killed by the Supreme Personality of God Himself, they are rejoicing. Lord Brahma Himself has come. How many persons are fortunate to have Lord Brahma come to their funeral? Or have Lord Brahma standing by their body in great awe and amazement that your body has been touched by the Supreme Lord Himself. Hence, you still have some luster, although the soul has already left the body. So it's a very auspicious, death is auspicious for a devotee because it means you're going to continue somewhere else with devotional service. Whereas for the materialist, because the vision is clouded by the misidentification with the body as the self, death means the end of everything. Right? There used to be this song, one of my favorite songs, a long, long time ago, maybe 15 years ago. It was a song by Bon Jovi. Most of you won't know this, that's fine. And it was called It's My Life. And I used to jump and rave to this song because the lyrics resonated with me. Right, my contaminated Kali-Yuga consciousness was like, yes, this is life. So the lyrics were saying, it's my life and it's now or never. And I ain't gonna live forever. I just wanna be, I can't remember the rest. But pretty much the summary is, we live now, we only have one moment. Enjoy as you can, do whatever you want. And this was my national anthem. Right, volume, max, it's my, just like this. So when you're identifying with the body, well, the body comes into being, it goes through the six changes, and then that's it. So that is me, that is who I am, I'm that body. As soon as the body dies, I'm finished. Therefore, anything that is close to the body becomes dear to me. And anyone who tries to take what is dear to me is an enemy. So these are the misconceptions of having to think that one is the body. When death comes, you try to hang on to the body and anything related to the body. But when we have some intelligence, I was listening to a lecture the other day by Srila Prabhupada, and someone was questioning the famous questions, Swamiji, you see that the women are less intelligent in your books, da 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 da. And then Prabhupada responded by saying, anyone who comes to Krishna consciousness is most intelligent. Whether they're a boy or girl, so these boys and girls, they're very, very intelligent because they understand that they're not the body. So when our intelligence really gets reawakened or sharpened, we understand, we might not realize it yet, but we understand that we're different from the body. And the body at some point is going to collapse, and the soul, the jiva within the body is going to go elsewhere. So why cry over spilled milk? Why hang on to something that is going to perish? Of course, it's easy to say, right? We all have to gain that experience. We have to realize this fact. And realization comes through cultivation of knowledge and practically performing devotional service. We get realization by active devotional service. Not that we just sit in here, but we have to serve Krishna. When Krishna sees that sacrifice of body, mind, words, he reveals in the heart, the spiritual master reveals to us in the heart the transcendental realities of Krishna consciousness. So this very, very first point that we, the first instruction that we're given in the Gita, you're not the body. Dehinu sminyata dehe komaram yuvaram jara tata dehantara prapti diras tatanamoyati. That is actually one of the first lessons from the Bhagavad Gita. The foundation of our spiritual journey is understanding that we are not the body, but we're pure spirit beings. That's the beginning. It's not the end. For some persons, that is the end. There's a little emoji. Sometimes it's in a court animation, and someone asks a question. What's the question? Somewhere along the lines of, "Do we need change?" Anyone says yes. Then the next question is, who wants to change? Then everyone's like, well, you know, I got things to do. So sometimes there have been sociological studies actually done where persons agree that the world is just not so livable at the moment, right? The amount of toxins, the brutality, the internal, external wars going on. And everyone agrees with that. But very few people will agree to making personal choices, individual changes in their lives. Very, very few persons say, do you accept that living like this is not beneficial, therefore you have to live an anti-material life? Very few persons accept. Whereas for us, just the acceptance or the understanding of the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, we're not the body, we're a pure spirit soul, that is the beginning. What takes us further are the 9 processes of devotional service. So it's not enough to suffer in material existence, then we realize, okay, I don't want to suffer, I want to be happy. That's not the end all. It's like bashing your head on the wall and then someone telling you to stop. And then you stop and then you think this is the goal of life. I've stopped bashing my head on the wall. But no, there's other things that happen apart from bashing your head on the wall. And that we have to find out. So finding out that we're not matter, we are spirit, is just the beginning. And that saves us a lot of trouble. It saves us the entanglement of identifying with the body and sliding down the slippery slope of repeated birth and death. So Krishna in the Gita, in the 2nd chapter, where he summarizes and gives us a synopsis of what is yet to come in the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam, the famous verse, Na jayate mriyate va karachin nayam bhutva bhavitavana bhuya ajal nitya sasvatayam purano nahanyate hanyamani sarire. 220. For the soul there is neither birth nor death, nor having once been does he ever cease to be. He is unborn, eternal, ever-existing, undying and primeval. He is not slain when the body is slain. That is right at the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita. And in the purport, Prabhupada is explaining that somehow the other, we do have that understanding at some points in our life that there's more to us than just the body. Although we don't want to act on that platform out of fear, out of ignorance, pretty much. Fear is based on material existence, having a material identity. So not wanting to know what comes further, we choose to live in illusion. And I was thinking the other day, having, you know, going to different places, meeting different people when studying, so many persons have admitted to me that it is not possible for them to be sober and live in this world, that they need something to make them numb, they need something to make them forget about the pains of the body, whether it's gross or subtle. Whether it's drugs, some type of intoxication, it's in demand. There was a case on the, in the news that there's such a high demand for the drug, what do they call it? For different types of methamphetamines, particularly ice, crystal meth, that they found in a shipment from China, 90 million worth of ice, packed into packets of ladies' undergarments. Because there's such a demand for it in Victoria. And they're finding on the streets, there's one devotee who's a PSO, something public, something officer. I don't know what PSO stands for. And he's telling me that the people who are pushing this drug on the street are 14 to 15 year old. So these are the persons who are not only taking it, but also selling it. Because life is just too tumultuous to deal with in a sober state. But the consequences of that is once you develop an addiction to an external source, you lose control of your senses and your mind. Therefore, your intelligence shuts down. So we cannot discriminate between right and wrong. That's the unfortunate situation. So trying to educate ourselves on the aspect of our existence as spiritual beings is of utmost importance. Because without having this understanding, we will continue in life being slayed by material existence. And when death comes knocking at the door, whatever that time is, we'll be shocked and we'll be trying to hold on to something that we cannot hold on to. And that is very scary. That produces fear, and fear will bind you to this world. Whereas when we take shelter of the spiritual nature, we become fearless because we have taken shelter of Krishna. Darkness cannot touch Krishna. Death cannot touch Krishna. But death stands far away. As soon as the sun comes, the darkness moves. It cannot be in the presence of the light. So Krishna is like the sun. Krishna, Surya, Sun. How does it go? Krishna, Surya, Sama, Maya, Haya, Andhakar. And Krishna is like the light. He's like the sun. We are so insignificant that we depend actually on Krishna. For our existence, we depend on the demigods. There's a demigod who controls everything, aspect of the body, its movement, our blinking, so many things. How exactly that happens, I do not know. But according to the Bhagavatam, we are under the control of higher beings. So sometimes we think we are so significant that we can control in this world. Yes, we can buy a house, we can pay the mortgage and the rent and have a car, but any minute that can all fall apart. So in the last purport, there's a line where Prabhupada says, his one signal is sufficient to destroy all our attempts. Just a tiny signal, whether it's an eyebrow or whether it's just deploying a Sudarshan chakra, everything is finished. So we can make elaborate plans to try and be in this material world, work very hard and buy our yacht when we're 65, and then we take it out to sea and we get swallowed up by a hurricane. So there goes 60 years of slaving off. In an instant, nature has destroyed. We can make elaborate plans to have our material plans fixed, but that which goes up must come down. Nothing is fixed in this material world, unfortunately or fortunately. So having to understand that the Lord's one signal is sufficient to destroy all our attempts, then we should think, how can we get the loving glance or the smile of Krishna that will give unlimited happiness? Just with one smile, one shot of Krishna's arrow, or hearing the flute, or hearing the holy name, it is enough to give us a happiness that we've never imagined. A happiness that the mind cannot even perceive. That is the process of Krishna consciousness. That it goes beyond material happiness, it goes beyond the happiness of Brahman. That is what's on offer, and that is what Krishna is providing to Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita, that you act for me, you perform your swadharma, your higher nature, not only your material swadharma, but your spiritual nature, you take that seriously, you worship me, you offer your homage unto me, you surrender. By doing that, you are guaranteed to come back to a place where there is no misery. And then Lord Chaitanya makes it even easier, because he doesn't even ask you to surrender first. Lord Chaitanya says, just come and chant. Just chant the holy name. And Lord Nityananda is even more merciful. He goes out looking for you. And it says the Panchatattva have broke open the storehouse of love of God. And they are plundering the contents, and they're distributing them. And the more they distribute, the more they plunder. And it's unlimited. So if we are attached, or if we associate ourselves with this type of reality, then our life in this world will be a pleasant one, will be a life dedicated to serving Krishna. In that way, we can be happy in a world where there's no happiness. So please forgive me. I hope I didn't ruin anyone's plans for material happiness. But yes, based on our karma and our situation, we will be given, we have a certain amount of happiness and distress that is accredited to us. That will come. However, we shouldn't be making elaborate plans, or we shouldn't be just focused on our material situation that we forget about Krishna. The whole reason why we practice Krishna consciousness is so that we can reunite once again with Krishna. Not that we can live nicely in this world, and in the next, in the heavenly planets, we can live nicely, have more beautiful bodies, etc. That's not the point. The point is to go back to Krishna, not to be materially prosperous. And that should be the focus. And by focusing on Krishna, Krishna will protect and will always give us shelter. And we'll always be blessed in this way. So I will stop there, and I will ask if anyone has a comment or question. Oh, was that a question?
Yeah. What are the questions of Arjuna?
The five questions of Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita. One was based on compassion. He saw his situation as having to go kill the his extended family, so he felt compassion for them. One argument was that irreligion would be prominent. The men will be killed, and no one will be there to perform religious duties, and the woman will not be protected. One argument was unwanted progeny, that the woman will become exploited, and therefore there will be unwanted progeny, Vanashankara. I forget the other two. Can someone remind me?
Enjoyment and sinful reactions.
Or you'll get sinful reactions for killing on the battlefield. And he wouldn't be able to enjoy in this life or the next because he would have killed his family. How can he enjoy his martial arts guru, his brothers, etc.? So he posed these arguments to Krishna, and Krishna used different types of philosophies to refute these arguments. Krishna started talking about duty. He started talking about Krishna then started talking about how he would benefit as a Kshatriya, that to actually decline from war and to go to the forest is something that would lead to his ridicule, because Kshatriyas do not turn away from a fight. So he started using jnana, he used karma, and he used the process of Bhakti Yoga to convince Arjuna to take part in this battle of Kurukshetra. And he only started doing that once he said, "I'm a soul surrendered unto you, please instruct me." Does that answer?
Thank you very much. So just to compassion,
Vanashankara,
irreligion, unwanted progeny,
sinful
reaction,
sinful reaction and enjoying the heavenly planets. He will incur sinful reaction. Yeah.
Thank you.
Common question, correction.
Sometimes we are riding on top of the elephant, sometimes the elephant is unto us, but mature body is always dead.
The mature body is always?
Mature body is always dead.
Oh, okay.
But he said there are phases shelter of the Vaishnavas, everything is okay.
But he said if we take shelter of the Vaishnavas, everything is okay.
True.
I mean, if we analyze the material package, what is it? Let's analyze our body from the time you wake up in the morning till you go to bed at night. What happens? We have our little pujas in the morning to deal with the not so attractive material body. That's the package. The material body means it will be diseased at some point or the other. It'll start going downhill once that youthful lust is gone. There'll be aches and pains, adi atmika, adi devika, adi bhautika. No one is excluded. Not even Donald Trump or Barack Obama. No one is excluded. There are no vacations in the material world. People say, I'm going on vacation, I'm going to Hawaii, I'm going to the Cayman Islands. Everything follows. We take our forehead everywhere. We take our body everywhere. Therefore, all these miseries are going to be there. There's certain types of persons who sometimes are so pessimistic. They just focus on the ugh side of material existence. Oh, the body stinks and it's always breaking. You have to fix it. It's like a car. You have to put this and that. Or we can just focus on, okay, I have this body in mind, I still have some energy, let me do some Krishna conscious work. Right? Because having that negative or that negative self-esteem about the body can stop us from performing devotional service. And therefore sometimes we hear quotes like, when I'm pure enough, I'll preach. When will that be? If we keep waiting for when we're pure, it'll be a while. At least in my case. So rather just throw yourself in the fire and get purified in the process, preach at the same time. So the material body, yes, it becomes very useful and becomes bedecked with Vaishnava qualities. And that's Krishna's mercy. That we can have this aching, failing body, but because we are connecting with Krishna, it becomes attractive. And so many persons out there do say that. They see a Harinam party and their jaws are dropping. Or they see a devotee and they're just like jaw dropping. Because there's this lifestyle that Srila Prabhupada has designed for us of rising early, following the four regulative principles. It changes our appearance, but it gives devotees a certain spark. Living a clean lifestyle, you can definitely see it. So persons naturally get attracted, and they wonder, what do you do? What time do you wake up, and how do you eat, and how do you sleep? Some people think we don't sleep. Actually, some people do think we don't sleep. Some people think we just drink milk and eat nuts. Like, oh, you're 32. Oh, you look so young. What's your secret? I'm like, I just eat puris and halva, and I have khichdi and fried ice cream. So yeah, I have a good appetite, right? But it is offered to Krishna. It is prepared for Krishna's pleasure. That is the difference. We're doing the same things, but we're doing it for Krishna. So we should use our body for Krishna's service. That is, using our body is also preaching. That is also Krishna conscious. So yes, the material body sometimes is not so delectable, but when it is connected to Krishna through the hearing and chanting process, then it becomes very valuable. Then it shouldn't be neglected. And that body then belongs to Krishna. As we see with the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya and Sanatana Goswami, when he was walking when he was in Jagannath Puri, and he was going to the Jagannath Mandir, but he didn't want to go via the normal route because he was afraid that his shadow would even touch the pujaris. So he would go the other way around and walk by the beach. And if some of you have ever experienced 43, 45 degrees, you know, come from sub-Saharan Botswana, it's fantastic. Try walking without shoes. So this is what Sanatan Goswami did, and he got blisters. But he couldn't even feel those blisters because he was just so fixed on Lord Jagannath. I can see the chakra, that means I'm close. And Lord Chaitanya heard about this and was thinking, you cannot do like this because there's so many things I want for you to do with this body. This body belongs to me. Not in the sense that then, okay, we walk out of here. This body belongs to Krishna. Krishna will come and tell me what I should do with my body. Know that we should maintain our body properly so that we can do more devotional service. Not that we don't take care of it. We have to look after our body so that we can go on for another 20, 30, 40 years in Krishna consciousness. Not that we're going to need a liver transplant and then we're going to need a new set of kidneys or whatever. We should take care of our body because we are offering it to Krishna. That's how it becomes purified. Alright, if there's no more other question or comment, we will end here. Thank you very much for your kind attention. Hare Krishna. Vantarachimad Bhagavatam ki. Shri Prabhupada ki. Go a minute.